Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Hello, and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week, I'll be talking about a wonderful new book, Name Ain't Sugar, by Michael Baim, and how Baim's friends are bringing it to life. Sometimes the backstory behind a book rivals the book itself. That's almost the case with the remarkable new novel Name Ain't Sugar by New Orleans lawyer Michael Baim. He wrote this story more than 20 years ago. It's a remarkably daring comedy set in Louisiana's Angola Penitentiary in the mid-90s, and then misplaced it for several decades. Recently, he located it again, sent it to Michael Conway, a friend who was a retired literary film executive at the United Talent Agency, and an old college friend from Lafayette. Michael aided Mickey Baim in finding a publisher. Pub date was set for November. Baim's friends were rejoicing that the book would make its way into the world at last when Baim went in for low-risk surgery November 7th, 2025. He died on the operating table a few days short of his 73rd birthday and the week before the book's publication. Undaunted, looking for a way to honor his memory, friends are rallying to get the word out about that book, Name Ain't Sugar. Mickey Baim's professional work was largely in family law, as well as working with Angola inmates, especially those on death row. He's mentioned in Sister Helen Prejean's Dead Man Walking as a contact between Sister Helen and inmates there, and he knew the prison environment through and through. Name Ain't Sugar is something totally unexpected. It is an inventive, brilliant comic novel of life in prison. When young Brad Covington is sent to Angola for manslaughter, a typo assigns him to Egypt, a fictional camp for homosexual men. Don't go looking for it, an author's note advises. During the course of the novel, it serves many purposes. Peacekeeping among the general population, for one thing. Brad, not gifted with great intellect, protests that he's straight, but he is eventually convinced that life in Camp E might be a good thing after all, certainly a safer prison existence. His campmates in Egypt insist on calling him Sugar, hence the book's title, Name Ain't Sugar. As time passes, Brad creates a life, becoming kind of a mascot for his gay friends, working with the cows in the dairy herd, becoming a rodeo hero, taming an impossible horse, establishing a kind of petting zoo of his own, and even learning to read from his fellow inmates. The cover features a manly chest and an Angola work shirt with an adorable kitten in the pocket. The novel's comedy and warmth arise from unrequited love and the gradual growth of human understanding, as well as the human tendency to create a family wherever we land. But the drama comes from the bad guys who actually belong in Angola and don't take kindly to what they see as preferential treatment. And that practically leads to all-out war. I recently sat down with Keith Cravey and Suzanne Stuess, longtime friends of Mickey Baim's, who were totally surprised by the scope and depth of this wonderful book. This book has been one of the surprises of this year for me because I wasn't expecting it. I didn't know it was coming. And then suddenly it arrived, and yes, it was one of the most wonderful books I've read all year. So we're going to talk a little bit about Mickey Baim, sure, and Name Ain't Sugar, which is the name of the book, with, yes, two of Mickey's very good friends, Suzanne Stuess and Keith Cravey. So, yes, tell us how you knew Mickey.
Keith, I think you may have known Mickey longer than I. I knew Mickey while we were at USL in Lafayette, mm-hmm, currently ULL at Lafayette. We know all that. But you knew him before that because in, I think, high school.
Well, yes. But I think at that time, Mickey was at USL already. He was a little bit older.
A little bit older. Yeah.
I had known Mickey for 50 some odd years and didn't know anything about this book until Suzanne and her sister Margot told me about it, which was just heartbreakingly after Mickey's passing. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yes, yeah. Knowing Mickey, I first met Mickey in 1971, and he was directing a little theater production of Romeo and Juliet. And I had been encouraged by a substitute teacher who was affiliated with the little theater to go down and audition. Uh-huh. And went down and was cast. And it was my first theatrical experience, really. Yeah. And, you know, in a show, and especially this show for whatever reason, but a cast and crew gel so much as basically a family unit. Mm-hmm. And so that was my first experience of Mickey, and we remained friends, albeit at a distance over the years, but always in loose touch, and even though it was far proximity.
And theater was always a part of his life, even though professionally he was a lawyer.
Yes. Right. Yeah, right. I was surprised that he took up law, really, because he was such
We all were. And Annelle, his sister, said, well, you know, he was big in speech and debate. And he got, you know, and just got real interested in the law and politics way, way back.
And he was interested in a particular type of law, too, which is really interesting, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, I didn't know a lot about his law career, I have to admit. I was overseas, I guess, most of the time that he was practicing.
Yeah.
He did my will for me one point in time when I was back on vacation and had been informed, well, you know, living overseas, you really ought to have a will.
You ought to have one. We all need a friend to do that.
Exactly. So he did a good job of drawing that up. It's still in effect.
But, you know, you were as stunned as all of his close friends were about the level of creativity in this book that had not revealed itself in a whole lot of other ways. It was astonishing to me. It really, really was.
Mickey.
His characters were as real could be.
Oh, absolutely. Wonderful. Absolutely. And Mickey was really a sort of quiet, buttoned-up sort of fellow, he had a great sense of humor, but it was wry and understated.
Absolutely.
And one of the things I remember about Mickey was his laugh, which was like Muttley, the cartoon character, kind of a.
Oh yeah.
And so, you know, when reading the book, I was like, wow, did this come out of Mickey? This is not the understated fellow that I knew. Some of the wild characters and the dialects and ideas of the book that were just raucous and hilariously funny.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Suzanne Stuess and Keith Cravey. They're friends of Mickey Baim, the late author of Name Ain't Sugar.
He was basically what we all referred to as a good guy lawyer. And, you know, he knew Angola because, you know, he defended a lot
of people. Well, yeah, he was kind of a public defender, wasn't
he? Yes. Not officially, that's what he
did. Right, he did.
Because he stayed with the same practice for, his entire career. Mm-hmm. And so he never made a lot of money, but he was just the most committed to helping those who needed legal help.
Yeah,
he was terrific. He's just a really principled kind of person. He really
but
was.
But it takes nerve to set a comedy at Angola.
Oh,
that's
I
the
know.
Thing. It's
I know.
Like,
I know.
Whoa.
Yeah,
you know,
yes.
You kind of step back a little bit and think, really?
Yeah,
really?
It's not the first place you think of as,
but it
as a setting for a comedy. It works magnificently. It really does.
It really does.
And all because of a typo.
I mean,
yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And just the random hand of fate, literally.
Oh, yeah.
And just the invention of a camp at Angola specifically for gay prisoners that does not exist.
Right.
And that he cautions us in his authorial role does not exist, so don't go looking for it.
Right, right.
But then he is generous enough to direct people to the serious work on Angola, which also seems very Mickey-like.
Oh, yes.
You know, to
say,
you'll find this here, but you can find this there if you go look for it, you know.
Right. Yeah, very generous. I think in all ways, wouldn't you say? Just a really generous person.
You know, it conveys more than just the comedy element. The idea of Angola as a society, a pretty complete society, which I've always heard, you know, this huge plantation farm prison that is, you know, a society within itself. But, you know, I've only heard that from afar and never had any idea or insight into it. And Mickey just made it real and made you realize how that worked with the, you know, the rodeo thing going on.
Yeah.
And the business of the dairy farm and all of that, that it's a self-sufficient community.
Halloween in Angola. Oh, my gosh. But even the animals in this book come to life.
And, you know, absolutely. It's dedicated to
his cat. So we should read a little bit from Mickey's book.
Well, let's see. Here we got a little bit of omniscient narrator. After supper, Brad went back to his bunk alone. Out of the corner of an eye, Matt watched as Brad sat on his bunk and opened a little brown envelope from his lawyer, probably. He took out a folded piece of paper, which looked like a handwritten note that had once been wadded up and then smoothed out. Brad unfolded this paper and looked at it for the longest time, thinking about something. Then he folded the paper again and put it back in the envelope. All this was done ever so carefully, like the paper would crumble to bits if he handled it too roughly. Brad then had some little photos that looked like they'd once been cut to fit a wallet. He lay back on his bunk, looking at each picture for a long time. Then he got the box that his prison shoes came in and put this stuff in it, all except one little picture, which he kept out. He put the shoebox in his locker, got out his toothbrush and his underwear, and went to the shower room. Now, while he was gone, Matt and I checked out the photo. It showed a pretty young woman with a happy smile and long, dark hair. Matt guessed she was Brad's girlfriend, maybe even his wife, though Matt kind of hoped she was his sister. Brad came back and put up the toothbrush, laid his jeans on his footlocker, and lay back down on his bunk to go on studying that little picture. All of Brad's moves were done slowly and silently, like nobody else was there. Mr. Ed had stopped back in Egypt after an evening meeting of the prison guards. He came out of the guard room waving to the night guard and called out to us on his way out. "Get out, men!" He switched out the light. "And our women!" The moonlight was shining in through the screen on the window next to Brad's bunk, casting a shadow across his chest. He moved his hands into the light so that he could see the little photo. The tiny picture, maybe an inch square, was the only familiar sight left for Brad. With the lights out, Matt no longer had to look off sideways, so he laid on his side on his bunk. "Brad, is that your name?" Silence. "Ed told me so. I'm Matt, remember?" No response from Brad. He was deep in thought and lost in his memories. We couldn't see his face in the darkness. "You strayed, huh?" Matt got no answer, and he laid on his bunk as he thought over that awful prospect. From the darkness to his right, he heard what sounded like a sniff. "Yeah, you're right," Matt agreed. "I'm sorry, too, for both of us." Later that night, I was headed to the bathroom and walked by the foot of Brad's bunk. He wasn't sleeping, just playing possum, afraid I'd talk to him. I paused for a moment. "Sugar, we just at the bus station. It ain't the end of the line."
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Susan Stuess and Keith Cravey. They're friends of Mickey Baim, the late author of Name Ain't Sugar. Well, okay. If you could read just this little bit, this last thing.
Sure. Mr. Ed had a wonderful idea. If Ann wanted us to talk to somebody, he knew just the person. Covington, come over here and talk to this lady. The rest of you, y'all, take a break. Ralph went to unhook Brad from the rest of the crew while Mr. Ed got in the cab of the truck and turned up the CB radio. Once he was unchained, Brad walked over to the truck while Ralph stayed behind to guard the rest of the gang. Ann stood at the back of the truck, writing on her clipboard as it stood at the rear of the gate, and was lying on the open tailgate. Brad waited there next to her. She finally realized he was standing there and turned to face him. Brad was smiling at her as the drops of sweat rolled down his chest. So your name is Brad? Brad looked down at the name tag Ann was reading, and then he realized he didn't have his shirt on. Sorry. He started to untie his shirt and put it on. Well, I have to ask you some questions, Ann said. I hope you don't mind. Brad nodded that it was okay, though he recalled what Butler had said earlier the other day. You gonna read my rights?
No, it's not like that. I just wanted to check on your working conditions.
An alarm bell went off in Brad's mind. I'm okay. I just want to be sure you workers are not abused or mistreated. Abused? Another alarm went off. Treat me good. What's that? Brad was looking at Ann's clipboard. Some things they don't have for you. Eye protection, sunscreen, rest periods. Mr. Ed's in trouble? Brad saw Mr. Ed on the CB, very upset. Well, it's the law, Annie said. He in trouble with the law? I have to write him up, Annie went on doing just that. Brad looked again at Mr. Ed and then looked back at Ann. Lady, Mr. Ed's my friend. Ann stopped writing and looked up at Brad. Well, he get all excited and he get the high blood and then he get sick again, like when he tripped over Luther and then got all mad and went to kick him and then he had to go lay down. Kicking workers was a serious violation. Ann looked over at the rest of the gang. Well, I want to talk to Luther. Brad wasn't sure he heard right. He was trying to think of what to say. Ann looked again at Brad. Is Luther on this chain gang? No, Mr. Ed said no. He didn't want him coming. Well, so where is he? Is he back in the prison? Brad shook his head. He'd been paroled? After some thinking, another shake of his head. Well, where is Luther? I want to see him. Brad hesitated a bit and checked to see if Mr. Ed was coming back before he mumbled to Ann. He's under the truck. Ann felt a terrible chill run down her spine. Mr. Ed had first tried to kick Luther, and now this poor worker was under the truck. And Brad didn't want Mr. Ed hearing him report this crime. Ann braced herself and took a look under the truck. Then she looked up at Brad for an explanation. Brad was speaking low. Okay. Well, I ain't supposed to have him, I know. I told him to stay home, but he don't listen. He ain't got any dog tags anymore. We gonna get rid up, too? No, wait. Annie felt like this interview was headed for outer space. You have a dog in prison? Yeah, and Duke, that's a cat. Mr. Ed let me keep Duke inside. And Fred and Steve, them too. They have cats, too? They is cats, themselves. Duke had some kittens. There's three of them. Then Doc came around and spaded the whole herd and ain't had no more kittens. Ann sort of leaned on the edge of the tailgate. Duke had kittens? Brad liked to talk about his animals, so he told Ann about Duke. During Brad's story, Mr. Ed came out of the cab of the truck and Ralph brought the rest of the gang over for a lunch break. Brad went on explaining as Mr. Ed listened in. Wouldn't have been in rodeo except for Mr. Ed. Camp boss don't go. No inmate can go. Well, what if one of you gets hurt way out here? Matt, he's a medic. He saved my life once. Brad put a friendly arm on Matt's shoulder and introduced him to Ann.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Suzanne Stuess and Keith Cravey. They're friends of Mickey Baim, the late author of Name Ain't Sugar. Suzanne Stuess, a friend from college at the University of Southwest Louisiana and BAME's theater work in New Orleans, loved the book's gentle comedy.
Matt decided to teach Brad to read. Ba-ka-da-fa-ga. Before supper each weekday, Brad would get out his phonics book and do the word drills for a few minutes to get warmed up. Then it was on the heavy stuff. The prison librarian had given Matt a second-grade reader to take back to Egypt. Matt would read the story as Brad followed along, and then it was Brad's turn to read solo. Today's author was Mother Goose, and Brad had a lot of questions. Was that his sister or his girlfriend? Brad wanted more details about the nature of Jill's relationship with Jack. His sister. Matt knew from experience that it doesn't matter, would not end the discussion. Oh, Brad studied the poem and the drawings. You ain't gonna find water up top of a hill. I think somebody was lying to him. More studying. And when they slip on, maybe some cows was loose up there. I'll talk about the cows and get back to you. How about the next one? It's got cats. The three little kittens, they lost their... Brad was stuck. Look at the word. Starts with M. And the rest of the word. It. 10. Brad thought it over. Mitten? Yeah. Start over. The three little kittens, they lost their mittens. Brad looked at Matt, who smiled and nodded, and they began to cry. Oh, mother dear, we sadly fear that we have lost our mittens. Brad stopped, put his finger where he stopped, and looked at Matt. You have a question? Yeah. Brad looked where his finger was pointing. What are mittens? It's like a glove, except there are no fingers in it, kind of like a sock. What good's that? You can't work. It's to keep your fingers warm in cold weather. Oh. Brad looked again at the book and at the drawings. Cats ain't got no fingers. Perhaps that's why they lost their mittens. And them kittens are going to confess? Shit. My ma would have beat my ass good if I lost my mittens. Matt chuckled and said, and we're only four lines into the cat poem. I'm sorry. No, it's good you're asking questions because it means you're paying attention to what you're reading. Let's try something that doesn't rhyme. They turned to the next section, and Matt handed the book to Brad, who began to read. The cowboy got on the house. Brad looked over at Matt. Try it again. Look carefully at each word. The cowboy got on the house, and the house. You ever got on a house? Yeah. Had to go clean out them gutters. A bunch of leaves was all stuck in there, and Lisa had been bitching about it for over a year until I got a hose, and I ain't lying. How many cowboys you know ride houses? Brad looked again at the book, and it suddenly came to him. Horse! I hope we both survive second grade.
Friends who had enjoyed BAME's clever theater offerings always hoped that he had a book in him, and he did. Name Ain't Sugar is hilarious and heartbreaking and unforgettable. As you might expect from the setting and subject matter, there's some X-rated language, but it's a great comic novel, a great gay novel, a great Louisiana novel. Name Ain't Sugar is available at Amazon, or you can order it at any local bookstore.
Here's what's on tap this week in the literary life. Joe Bond discusses and signs his debut novel, Hope House, Tuesday, May 19th at 6 at Octavia Books. Jesmyn Ward appears in conversation with Robert Jones Jr. and signs On Witness and Repair, Essays, Tuesday, May 19th at 6 p.m. at McAllister Auditorium at Tulane University. This is a ticketed event. Tickets at Baldwin & Company. Nick Brown discusses and signs his new book in the 33 and a Third series, Violent Femmes, Wednesday, May 20th at 6 p.m. at Garden District Bookshop. Mario Solomon Simmons signs To Redeem a Nation, the century-long battle to restore the soul of America, and appears in conversation with Gary Chambers. That's on Thursday, May 21st at 6 p.m. at Baldwin & Company. This is a ticketed event. And coming up, the Symphony Book Fair Sale 2026 will be held at the UNO Lakefront Arena on Saturday, May 30th and Sunday, May 31st. Sale hours on Saturday are from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. There is an entrance fee from 9 a.m. until 12 p.m. on Saturday only. There'll be free entrance after 12 p.m. on Saturday and all day on Sunday. Sale hours on Sunday are from 9 a.m. until 4 p.m. There'll be a special children's book sale on Sunday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. where children accompanied by an adult can decorate a shopping bag, then fill it with selections from our children and young adult tables. There are more than 50 different categories of books, including fiction, mysteries, sci-fi and fantasy, cookbooks, history, religion, the South, art, and biography. There will also be artwork, frames, sheet music, CDs, audiobooks, DVDs, vinyl records, puzzles, and games. All proceeds benefit the Louisiana Philharmonic Orchestra. For further information, visit www.lpovolunteers.org.
Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Hellis Foundation, the Jefferson Parish Public Library, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org.